This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QueerFam for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Guys, guess what?
We are doing a live taping of If These Ovaries Could Talk.
You are so lucky.
I know. We are so lucky.
We are so lucky because we'll get to meet you.
Yes. We're partnering with the LGBT Center here in New York City.
Great place.
Yep. And this is our Pride and Parenting event. And it's going to be on May 18th at 6:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to want to get your tickets.
Yes. You get tickets at ovariestalk.com, and there's a little tab that says live taping. So you just click on that, get your tickets.
You're just reserving them. They're free. You don't have to pay for them.
Yes, we don't make you pay for things, but you can donate to the center.
That's
if you
a
want
good
to.
Idea. And who are our guests, Robin?
The Abbeys, who were the stars of Bravo's hit show, The Newlyweds.
Very
and they're
gonna exciting.
Talk about their path to parenthood, and we're super excited about that.
Get your tickets now. Guys, welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Oh my God, I'm Robin.
I'm Jamie, and we are your hosts. As always, we have such an exciting guest with us today.
And by the way, this is our 15th episode.
Oh my God.
That's going to be coming on Monday. Very exciting.
Very exciting. Look at us.
Can you believe we made it?
Looks like we made it.
You were dying to do that.
It just popped in. You know, songs just pop in, Robin. But no, our guest is fantastic today, and I can't wait to talk to her.
Well, so we discovered her from an article that she wrote that was on Medium, and also I believe it got picked up on Lenny Letter, Lena Dunham's, you know, little thingy that
Teeny
she does.
Thingy.
You know, millions of people reading it. and her name is Rachel Lehman. I believe the last name is Lehman Haupt.
Haupt.
We're going to have to ask her about that because I got nothing.
Yeah, we have a couple things we're going to have to ask her about. We're going to actually have to ask her a lot because this article covered some pretty scientific stuff.
Yeah, so essentially it's this process called IVG, which
IVG.
Is... IVG. It's like a new...
Not IVF.
No.
It's new. It's IVG.
Well, it's not even there yet. They're working on it.
But we have a little gambling thing. What is the word
it's
I'm
called,
looking for?
It's called in vitro. Oh, well, a bet. Oh,
we
a
have
wager.
A bet for how it's supposed to be said because we've only seen it written. We haven't heard it said yet. So I
and
think
we're dumb.
It's in vitro gametogenesis. That's what I think it
See,
is.
See, I would say in vitro gametogenesis. That's ridiculous.
Because I'm thinking of gamma rays or some gametogenesis.
By the way, Rachel, our guest, writes an article about IVG in vitro gametogenesis. And I wrote an essay that's on Medium right now called My Kids Found Out I'm a Jerk. So she's a scientist.
But by the way, you should really check out Robin's articles anyway, because they're very well written and they're fun to read. Just like she's fun to listen to. She's also fun to read.
I mean, yeah, if you like to read.
It's on Medium now?
Yeah, it's on Medium.
Oh.
Yeah. Awesome. So anyway, back to our smart lady.
This IVG in vitro could possibly change the face of fertility.
Especially how it pertains to the LGBT.
Yes. And it's crazy. So you guys have to listen to her and hear what she has to say.
Let's get her in here and talk about it.
Yes.
All right.
All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes.
Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you? Nice to talk to you guys.
Yes, totally. Really nice to talk to you. We're very excited to hear all about this.
And you are our first person on the podcast that we're recording remotely. This is like a big deal.
Yes, Rachel, you're in the Bay Area.
I am. I'm coming at you from Sausalito, California.
Which is hilarious because I am from San Francisco and I was just there actually visiting.
we traded places.
I missed you. My brother lives in Sausalito. So shout out to Sausalito. Yeah.
That's funny. What's your brother's name?
Jesse.
Oh, Jesse and Jamie, the Jays.
Yeah, we're Jays.
Well, thank you for coming. We talked a little bit about the way that we found you was we read your article on Medium, but I believe it's also, has it been since added to Lenny Letter? Did I make that up?
Yeah, it was published simultaneously on
Congratulations.
Medium.
Awesome. Well, we found the article fascinating, but before we get to that, we want to talk first. You are kind of a non-traditional family in that you are a single mom by choice, correct?
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that. Give us your elevator pitch, because we always start off every episode with a person's elevator pitch. It's sort of like your personal log line of how you would describe yourself.
Well, I guess the way to put it is that I was not in a place in my life where I had a partner, so I took the means of production into my own hands.
Production.
Good for you.
I love that. It's like you know, a television show. I'm doing production.
I mean, it was, you know, sort of an empowered choice that, you know, I was at an age where my biological clock was ticking, mm-hmm. and it really hit me that, you know, having a baby, this was sort of the last chance to try to have a baby, and that, you know, the pressure of finding the right partner, you know, man to make that baby with was, mm-hmm. you know, not working in terms of that timing. So mm-hmm. I decided to put the cart before the horse and start trying to get pregnant, on my own with a sperm donor. And the reason was really, you know, just quite practical. I didn't want to put the pressure on myself or on anybody who I was in a relationship with,
right,
to, you know, have to decide really quickly whether to have children. And mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, that could have potentially, you know, made things not good for the child if, you know, I had a child with somebody who, you know, I wasn't in a relationship with that was, you know, a good relationship. And, you know, I also, you know, felt like I could do it by myself. I mean, yeah. I had the, you know, economic power to, you know, make money, and I had support from my family. And so, you know, that decision, it just made more sense to try. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, really didn't, you know, given the fact that there are so many family shapes now and, you know,
everybody's doing it like that.
Yeah. The traditional nuclear family, you know, is just a percentage of what, you know, a percentage of the pie of the kind of families there are now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the concept of, you know, not, you know, a lot of people were like, well, did you think it was selfish because, you know, you didn't, your kid didn't have a dad. And, you know, I think
lots
that
of parents and kids don't have
lots
dads,
of kids,
you know?
Lots of parents and kids don't have dads.
Even
I mean,
kids,
lots
even
of parents
who get
and kids
pregnant
have,
the traditional
have,
way. Yeah.
Yeah. Have bad, have, don't have good dads. And then lots of parents, you know, of kids don't, I mean, lots of kids don't have dads because they are, you know, either born to, you know, a lesbian family or, or, you know, a single mom by choice. And, you know, that those yeah. numbers are really growing. I mean, I sure. think that
case in point, I this think podcast. That there,
yeah.
yeah, that's this podcast. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and there's, and you know, it's like, and the kid, that's the kid's normal, whatever the normal is, that's their normal. That's what they know.
As long as they're surrounded by love.
Yeah.
And you know,
so I did freeze my eggs when I was 37. I mean, this whole, path that I ended up taking, you know, resulted because I, ended a relationship with somebody, when mm-hmm. I was 37, which was kind of an inopportune age.
Tough time. And yeah. to end a relationship.
I put all this time into it. Where's my child?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it, you know, and, you know, in, you know, he's a wonderful guy and I loved him very much. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, probably were we the best match for each other? No. And, you know, if we had had a child together, you know, I would not have the wonderful child that I have now. So, you know, yeah. life takes, you know, things happen for a reason.
It's very fatey.
Mm-hmm. And Rachel,
yeah.
I don't think fatey's a word, but we just made it a word.
We just made that a word. So you used a sperm bank, right? To be clear. Is that what you
yeah.
used?
So yeah. I went to a sperm bank, you know, limits the number of families that, you know, a donor can donate to. So sure, while, you know, my son does have, donor siblings, you know, it's not like, you know, they limit the number. So it's, you know, it's not like that movie where, you know, he's going to discover,
yeah,
you know,
what, Jim Carrey?
Some
was
guy's going to discover he has 40 kids.
No, I don't remember who
it was. Was it Jim Carrey? It was
no,
somebody like that.
It was somebody like that. All of our kids
it was Vince Vaughn.
That was a funny right. movie, but, actually.
Yeah, I didn't actually see it. Are you in touch with any of the donor siblings?
Not yet, but it's definitely something I think about in the future. I mean, it's going to really be up to my son
right.
as
yeah.
to whether, you know, he wants to make that choice. I'm interested in meeting those families. And, you know, many, many people do have relationships with their donor siblings.
I have Facebook groups with both of the donors for my kids, and Jamie hasn't yet, but we've had a lot of people.
But all
on
of
who
our
have.
Kids have yeah. donor siblings.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
guest we've had, and a lot of our, a couple of our guests have very close relationships.
Yeah, like vacation with them, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's something I'm interested in exploring. I mean, it just hasn't been the path of our family. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a really personal choice and decision as to when and why. You know, the reason I did it was because we were looking for more sperm. So it's like, but it's a, you know, I know other people who are just like, oh, you know, why would, like what Jennifer and Lisa said, why would you want more love? And
right.
I was like, oh.
And they said they all chose the same donor. So they all have that in common.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, yeah. I'd be interested to hear like what it would be that would make you or not make you not want to do it.
What would make you not do it or not do it? I mean, I guess that to some extent there's a time commitment to it. So it's like you open up, you know, that can of worms and,
oh, like,
you
like know, you're making suddenly, extended family, like all of a sudden,
yeah,
you have more
suddenly
cousins.
your social life changes, you get mm-hmm. oriented towards these groups, you know, there's, and I haven't wanted to open the door yet. And mostly it's because, you know, he's just turning, you know, he'll be six this summer and, mm-hmm. you know, I think he's, you know, just even beginning to grok the idea that, you know,
does because that's something we talk about as like gay people. We have to talk about, like, we're forced to talk about it. We're like outed almost because the kid knows that it takes a dad and a mom. So, but in your situation, does he know everything?
He does. I mean, he knows, you know, I've been telling him the story since he could talk.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, how much of it, you know, how much of his developing brain understands each nuance and, you know, he's beginning to understand the biology of conception and mm-hmm. he knows that, you know, there's a picture on the wall in our apartment of me
pregnant. Of the biology of conception.
Yeah. So he knows that he grew inside me and he knows that, you know, that a donor helped. And he knows he doesn't have a dad and he knows that we're just a mom and a kid family and that there are many families like that. And there are some kids, you know, some kids have two moms, some kids have two dads, some kids have three, you know, a mom, a dad, two moms and a dad. And, yeah. you know, it's, you know, he knows that there are a lot of different kinds of families.
That there are.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's good you're open, because I actually know some people in the straight world, as I like to say, who use donors and who haven't told their kids. And I'm so afraid for them for that moment when the kid opens up some, I was going to say desk drawer, but let's be honest, it's going to be a computer file. And they're, you know, they're just like, picture what? Of a donor, you know, because they just, can you imagine? So it's, yeah. I think it's great you're being so honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the, you know, the big thing, there was actually a book written about it by a lawyer named Naomi Kahn and the woman who runs the Donor Sibling Network. Mm-hmm. And it basically, you know, talks about from, you know, from a psychological perspective, it is much healthier for the kids to know the truth from the beginning.
Sure. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that's scientifically backed, you know, but that's how I've always felt.
Not just our instincts, Jamie.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing I think that's really interesting is that, you know, there's this woman, she's a psychologist in England, Susan Gollenbach. And, you know, she has been studying, you know, what she calls not, she has a book that she wrote that's an academic book called Modern Families. And, you know, she's been kind of studying kids that come from non-traditional families and are born from, you know, reproductive technology.
Oh, interesting.
Doing research with them. Yeah, she would be actually a great person to have on your show.
Get her in touch with us.
Yeah.
I will. And so... So
how we're screwing them up.
Yeah.
I did a story for Slate about the fact that one of her research studies found, you know, I think she studied over a period of time, kids that were born to single parents, but I think mostly focused on lesbian mothers. And, you know, she really has concluded that, you know, and this is from a psychological perspective, that, you know, it's really not about the shape or the structure of the family.
Right.
It's really about, you know, the attachment, the kinds of bonds the kids have. You know, the kids really need, you know, a healthy attachment with one parent.
Right. Go figure,
really,
right?
Is really what it's really what kids need. And and the thing that actually does hurt the kids is more of the social stigma from the judgers, you know.
Of course.
You know, who somehow have this moral belief that the traditional nuclear family is better and healthier for kids. And that has its whole history of why that happened. But, you know, the fact is that there are many shapes that you can raise a kid and in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So true. My daughter just told me yesterday she doesn't like dads. She just she just decided, I don't like dads, Mom. Okay.
Did you ask why?
I said why. I don't remember what her answer was because I was still just so flabbergasted that she told me, you know what? I don't like dads. Okay.
it's so funny because it's like your family makeup is like ours, like three women and one boy. And you just and that boy is like going to be hopefully the most sensitive boy in the world.
Oh, gosh.
One hopes.
I mean, or, you know, or not. I mean, I have to say, you know, it's funny. It's like, and then the whole gender thing is interesting as they think, if a boy is raised by two women or a boy is raised by women. And it's funny because, you know, I've been raising Alexander with au pairs who live with us.
It's good you can get help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
And, you know, they've always been women. So in a way,
it's like a lesbian household.
Yeah.
Well, we'd like to get into a little bit your article because it was fascinating.
Fascinating.
It's what brought you to us. And we want to start by saying, how do you pronounce IVG?
We have a bet. Now tell me if I'm wrong, which I probably am. In vitro gametogenesis. No.
That sounds right to me. In vitro gametosis.
Wow. How'd I add an N in there?
Because there was a genesis in the, I don't know, I cut and pasted from your
Say it one more time again, Rachel.
I'm not sure I'm even pronouncing it correctly, though.
Oh, that's good.
We assume you are.
So it's a fluid word. In vitro gametosis.
Gametosis.
Okay.
However you say it, it is fascinating, and it's on the frontier of baby making.
So tell us a little bit about, like, you know, the article and, like, what, and about the process.
So basically what IVG is it is a new a technology that is being researched now. There's kind of an small international team of biologists that are working on and it's really known as artificial gametes. So the idea is that you can take any cell in the body and potentially grow it into an egg or sperm cell.
I mean, that's mind-blowing.
I mean, that's what I always said to Anne. God, if only we could just
take your
make
cells
a baby and ourselves, you know? I mean, I said it so many times, like fantasy, because I like to live in fantasy land.
And that's mind-blowing.
It is.
You know, the science has been underway for the last 20 years, even though very few people have heard about it. I mean, it's
– Yeah, I never heard about it before your article.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what really sort of has brought it into you know, into the more mainstream is that a Japanese scientist named Shinya Yamanaka in 2006, he won the Nobel Prize because he found a way to turn any cell into the body, you know, easy to harvest ones like skin cells and blood cells into cells known as iPS cells, which stands for induced pluripotent stem cells. And basically they can be reprogrammed to become any cell in the body. And it's very interesting to a field that's known as regenerative medicine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been controversial because these stem cells, you know, are derived from human embryos. So there's a whole controversy around it. So basically from the fact that, you know, scientists now have these iPS cells to work with, based on, you know, this Nobel Prize winning work, you know, in 2016, researchers at Kyoto University in Japan announced that they had turned cells from a mouse tail into iPS cells, you know, these induced pluripotent stem cells, and then made those cells into eggs that went on to gestate into pups.
Right.
And so it has been done in mice.
So, but this is the part that I'm still confused about. So they take the skin from, let's say, the mouse, or let's just say a person, if it were to be working with a person, right? And then they have to get embryo cells from another person, like, to turn it into? That's the part that...
So the way it works is that they have to turn cells from – so they turn this they turn the cells from a mouse cell into the induced pluripotent stem cell.
Right.
And then from there, they made those cells into eggs. So they got – they were, you know, in media, in a dish, they were coaxed into eggs. And then basically those eggs were inseminated with sperm to make pups.
Got it.
Right. And they actually made pups of mice.
Mouse pups. I mean, mouse pups were born from these.
They actually did
is called artificial gametes.
Right.
Because these eggs were made not in the bodies of the mouse, but from, you know, the iPS cell. But, you know, what it hasn't been done is, you know, the big next step that, you know, all of these teams of researchers are working on is it hasn't been done in human beings. And, you know, if it's done in human beings, there is incredible, incredible potential for, you know, what this could mean.
Are they close with humans? Where are they with humans?
Amanda Clark, a stem cell biologist at UCLA, told me that she believes that, you know, they meaning the, you know, the sort of international team of group of people that are working on this are 10 years away from research grade artificial gametes, which means that there are many, many layers of regulation and, you know, that it's going to have to go through actually be testing in human. I mean, it may not even ever be approved in humans. So,
right.
You know, the next step will probably be, you know, in an animal.
So I have a question. Are they studying this for the sole purpose of using it for fertility, or are they also studying this for cures for certain diseases, or like what can be done with this IVG?
I mean, according to the scientists that I spoke to for this article, the first application would really likely be for reversing infertility.
Huh.
Men could have new sperm made and women like, could have new eggs made from other cells in their body.
I'm laughing because it's like all things start with men. You know, it's like men so that men.
No, I didn't say men.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general. But it's fine. So it's the whole point is to try to, you know, help with infertility.
Well, I mean, I think that that's really kind of the likely first. That's where the research.
Now, are there any, so if for a same-sex couple, is there any other science or things that would need to be done for it to work? Because you have, you know, two women or two men and you're missing a chromosome or in one of those cases, an X or
yes,
a Y or
that's,
something.
That's a very, very good question. So the more mind-bending trick is also, you know, possible that cells from a man could be turned into egg cells and cells from a woman could be turned into sperm cells.
That's mind-blowing.
Exactly. And that would be an even bigger leap in reproductive medicine than, you know, than in vitro fertilization. And obviously that is where sort of the premise of that article, of the article that I wrote, mm-hmm. Came from, in that, you know, it potentially could mean that two women could potentially have a baby, a biological child, or two men could have a biological child. Obviously, men would need a womb to grow that child. And, you know, there's also a lot of things happening in the world.
I guess they would still
need,
the men would still need a surrogate.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things happening in the world of artificial wombs and womb transplants. I mean, at the last American Society for Reproductive Medicine conference, a doctor at UCSF said that it is completely biologically, you know, feasible that a womb could be transplanted into a man.
What?
Trans woman. Wow. Yeah.
So are you talking about, like, I mean, there's work in this womb business, like even for outside of the body, does it have to be in a human
being? Yeah, there is work being done on artificial wombs. The work is based, I think it's at University of Pennsylvania. But yeah, they've invented something called a bio bag, and I think have actually had.
By the way, nothing sounds worse than a bio bag. My baby's in a bio bag.
They've actually had a sheep, a baby lamb born from one of the bio bags, and I think the kind of first application of the bio bag is for premature babies.
Creating a
womb-like environment for premature babies, mm-hmm. because, you know, other than the incubator, something that really more imitates a womb. But I think, you know, the implications of that is that maybe, you know, from there could be a baby that's actually grown in vitro.
Wow. So there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot happening out there.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot happening that you can apply to the new shape, you know, potentially apply to the new shapes of family.
I got to say, all of this, while it sounds so exciting to me and amazing, I, being from a non-traditional family and I'm gay, I'm even scared by it a little.
Oh my
I'm
God.
I'm scared.
I'm frightened. All I keep thinking of is that, what was that Stephen King where is it Pet Sematary where the pets are all they're like cloned and then they
I
come back and try
movie.
To kill people?
They don't get cloned. They just die.
Weren't they cloned? Did I make all that up?
You're making it
get
up.
Get me Stephen King on the phone. it's scary.
It is scary. So I'm imagining that
also sounds expensive.
Well, that's to be determined, I'm sure. But I'm also imagining that there's going to be a lot of backlash with this.
What was the feedback to your article?
A backlash with the idea.
The religious right.
First of all, let me just go back. We're talking a little circularly, which is
Well,
fine.
That's what we do. So welcome to our show. We talk circularly.
I do want to just be clear about, I think people understand now that artificial gametes, you know, are basically, you know, derived from other cells in the body, but I want to say that for the application, potential, you know, hypothetical application of same-sex reproduction, there would need to be another biological hurdle. And that would be that scientists would need to somehow make a cell derived from a woman who has two X chromosomes into a sperm cell with one X and one Y, mm-hmm. and do the reverse, turning an XY male cell into an XX female cell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, these steps are actually feasible really has been, debated for like a decade already. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like even 10 years ago, the Hixton Group, which is an international consortium on stem cells ethics, predicted that making, you know, sperm from female cells would be difficult or even impossible. But that was before gene editing mm-hmm. and various cellular engineering technologies. So, you know, in 2015, two British researchers reported that women in theory could have offspring together by injecting genetic material from one partner into an egg of the other.
Right.
And with the child would be all girls as there would be no Y chromosome involved. So, you know,
so there's still a lot of layers before it gets to the LGBT folks.
A lot of layers, but, you know, I think interesting to talk about and also, you know, interesting to talk about, which is going back to, you know, the why I wanted to kind of reverse backwards for a second and then leap into the question of ethics. I mean, let me just also say one other thing. Another possible, you know, possibility is that actually a single woman could have a child by themselves. You know, they could reproduce by herself.
Their own genes.
And a human version of parthenogenesis. I mean, I was saying that too. And parthenogenesis technically means in Latin virgin birth.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I wrote in the one of my funny lines in the story was it could be the feminist version of the goddess Athena springing from Zeus.
Yeah, I remember that. I read that.
I can't imagine wanting that because you're only having your genes. It's just like I would want to. I don't know. It feels like twinning rather than
I just thought that you needed
combining.
I thought you needed two persons' genes to make a person, but I guess
it feels like it feels like cloning.
It feels like cloning.
And as a therapist friend of mine said, it's like the ultimate in narcissism.
Yes. It feels like you're only going to make yourself. Like part of, I think, having a baby, in my opinion, with another person is you're taking a little bit of me and a little bit of you and, you know, making, you know, and you know, weeding out some of my big girl German stock with Mary. with Mary's other parts. You know, it's just like the idea that you would just have your stuff cloning.
Well, you know, to each his own though, too.
Possibly be offending anyone with saying that, Jamie.
I'm just thinking there must be someone out there who would love to do that. Well, yes.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't even want to clone my cat. Like I had the most amazing cat in the world. I think I'd be afraid that the next cat would look just like her, but would, you know, kill me in my sleep.
I guess that's the ultimate question with cloning though.
With all of this,
you know, all of this is so.
I mean, and you know, there are now, you know, there are researchers and there are legal, you know, lawyers and legal scholars, you know, really debating debating these issues now. And people sometimes say, well, why are they debating it now when it actually is so far off in the distance?
You have to, right?
You know, think about all technology, like technology happens and, you know, you need to kind of plan for, and, you know, society needs to, you know, bring. You know, technology really has no morals, and society really has to bring the morals to it. Right. So it's
like, you know, because scientists are usually coming from the point of view of can I, rather than should I?
Exactly. And the big should question. And I think the thing that's also interesting is that, you know, you always have. I mean, what I think one scientist said to me is that you always have to be prepared because you never know the timing of biology. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like it could be that, you know, there is a breakthrough that happens next week.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's like you can really never predict the timing of biology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this could happen next week. This could happen in 10 years, but that doesn't mean that's going to happen for us in the next 100 years based on laws and ethics. And, you know, look at stem cell research, how much pushback that gets.
Yeah.
So,
because you have like the really strong presence with, you know, religion, mm-hmm. but that's why I'm curious what kind of feedback, because your article really had a particular slant in terms of just, you know, your top line of it being that it could be LGBT families could use this ultimately. So I'm curious about the feedback you got. Were there a lot of comments? Did you get feedback?
It was the most highly trafficked story that NeoLife has had so far. And it has been,
congratulations.
It has been gotten so many comments, thousands of comments. Wow. And
what are the comments like? Are you hearing from the religious right? Are you hearing from, you know, moral people?
Yeah,
from all
over the spectrum. I mean, people, you know, some people think this is crazy. Some people think that, you know, this is a fascinating, you know, new patent possibility. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, all what you imagine people would write, people have written, you know, people think that, you know, this is disgusting. People right. think that it's, you shouldn't play, you know, play with nature in this way. You know, some people think, wow, what an amazing opportunity. I mean, you know, and you know, I mean, it's just the whole question about reproductive technology in general, because they're diversifying the way we reproduce mm-hmm. and, you know, opening reproduction up to groups that previously may not have it.
Sure.
And, you know, and I think that, you know, I think the sort of, you know, for all the, you know, things that could go biologically wrong or socially wrong, uh-huh. you know, or the pushback that it could get, you know, I think from, you know, a more, you know, just like a belief in that everybody should experience love and have the family they want. I mean, I think the idea of, you know, being able to, you know, create a genetic child with the person you love, if that's what you want, and, you know, be able to have a child, you know, that share that, you know, where there isn't a donor involved and that shares, you know, the people who are in love's genetics mm-hmm. because that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know, the woman that I wrote about in the beginning of the article mm-hmm. is a woman who runs My Family Coalition. She's executive director of it. And she, you know, basically she and her, you know, her co-parent, you know, when they were married, it was just right after gay marriage had been legalized, and they, you know, decided to marry and they decided they wanted to have a child. And when they started thinking about having a child, they thought, you know, how do they, you know, want to have this child? Do they want to adopt? Do they want to use a donor? And ultimately, you know, they decided that having, you know, a connection to their ancestral roots and, mm-hmm. you know, genetic connection was really high priority for them. And so that's why they chose to, you know, conceive with, you know, one of, with her brother.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about that as an option.
So yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was sort of, you know, what is known now in this field as their choice in collaborative reproduction. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, IVG could potentially make, you know, take that choice out of the picture. But, you know, as
to go on that, what's interesting, and it's a little bit back to what we were saying before, is like I feel sort of weird about it. Like it, like I feel scared by it. I feel like, oh, should we be doing that and all those things. But then when I think about it, probably a decade or two decades before, somebody probably thought IVF was this crazy thing. And I mean, remember they used to call them right. like what, test tube babies and, you know, freezing your eggs. And it was all like, what are we freezing eggs? And then you're going to unfreeze it. It's like, it, like those were all probably people were scared of them then too. It's mm-hmm. just,
people are still scared of that, by the way.
Are they?
Yes. Yeah, I actually,
I got to get out of New York City every once in a while.
Who is not?
Yeah,
into
and I mean, and I think one of the quotes that Renata, who was, you know, in this couple, and she said in the article, is that it might take away from this great opportunity to challenge and expand the notion of what family looks like. Which, you know,
yeah, I saw that. I don't know that I agree with that though, because it's like I don't know. It's like we don't have to be groundbreaking. We do it because that's our only choice of making a family. And I, you know, it's like we don't have to go the hardest way possible. Although I don't know that this way is easier. Hardest way possible.
I mean, this is
probably the most expensive.
From a biological perspective. This is the hardest way possible.
But yeah, I mean, it could. It's both. It goes both ways.
Yeah,
I mean, it's great. It is great that we are pushing the forefront of these non-traditional families, and we are mm-hmm. groundbreakers, and it, you know, that does feel good, and we are challenging the norm. But it would feel great also to be able to create a child that is biologically my wife's and my own. I mean, that would be amazing. That's mm. my dream. It still scares me to death, but that would be so fantastic.
Well, it's like, I feel like that was in If These Walls Could Talk too, the one with Ellen DeGeneres. And I remember her in the scene with her and Sharon Stone, and she said something like, I just love you, and I want this baby to be a part of me and a part of you. And it breaks my heart that we can't have that, mm-hmm. you know, because we don't often talk about that, I think, because we just can't have it. So we just deal with it and move on mm-hmm. to what we can have.
Mm-hmm. So this is all feeding into a new book that I'm working on about you know, the new shapes of modern family, which is really exciting. And I have a newsletter in which I report on these issues called The Art and Science of Family. Mm-hmm. Find it on my website, www.lehmanhaupt.com, or on the website for the newsletter called The Art and Science of Family.
And we'll make sure to link you in all of our business yes. and on If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook and everything so that everyone can find you. Because right. this is just really
and my
fascinating.
And my first book, which really kind of starts off by kind of explaining the new choices, it's really more – the first book is really more focused on women's choices in the age of egg freezing and, you know, the ability to – you support yourself and become a parent by yourself, but it's called In Her Own Sweet Time, Egg Freezing and the New Frontiers of Family. And, you know, that's really what kind of started me on this research.
And that's available now.
And that's available now on Amazon. Yes.
Okay. That's great.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for, I would say stopping by, but you didn't stop by, but thank you for logging in. Thank you for beaming in and sharing the story. Cause I just
this
think
is
this
a futuristic
is incredible.
Episode. We're beamed in and we're talking about some futuristic stuff.
And if anybody has any questions for Rachel, please put them on our site because I think she's probably got a lot more knowledge about this and she'd be happy to share it. Am I speaking out of turn by saying that?
No, I would love it. Well, I'm so happy that we're all on the same page in this work.
Yes.
And I look forward to I hope we can stay in touch.
Absolutely. Oh. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Wow.
Holy cow.
That's a lot of info.
So much.
Man.
But just like so much to think about.
So much. Not sure I even really totally understand it.
I got about a quarter of it.
I mean, it's just the idea, the concept of this is
yeah.
Mind-blowing.
It really is.
It is, and it's scary.
I think the drinking game from this episode is how many times I said mind-blowing.
A lot. Well, you mouthed it to me a lot, too, which you guys couldn't hear or see.
So just keep drinking as you go because I was saying mind-blowing.
Just because it's mind-blowing. And it's, you know, I think we'd love to hear from you guys what your thoughts are on this or the ethics of it and...
Or what problems could come up from this?
Yeah. Or are you in a non-traditional family and think, God, I wish I had that option? Because part of me feels that way. Part of me is like, wow, I'm not sure about the repercussions of this.
Yeah. I feel like if it was like just an accepted thing down the road, it would have been like, you know, it was already like a, you can do this or this. I would have done it with Mary.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
I always said, God, if only we could. Yeah. I always said that. I say that still, you know.
Well, thank you for coming, everybody.
Yes.
Thanks for coming over to our house today. That was so weird.
Won't you be my neighbor?
Well, we're glad that you decided to listen to us today.
Yes.
How's that?
And hit us up on the social. Mm-hmm. You can find us at
If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook, ovaries_talk on the Instagram, and Ovaries Talk on Twitter. And don't forget, get your tickets to our live taping.
Live event,
May 18th, 6:30 p.m. at the Center in New York City.
You can't miss it.
You can't.
We'll talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week.
You will.
Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.